Surely there must be something you can do.
I'm doing everything I can. And stop calling me Shirley.
Hey, hello everybody, and welcome back to another exciting episode of East to West with Nick and Rob. My name is Rob.
And my name is Nick. Hey, Rob, I'm doing everything I can, and stop calling me Shirley.
You're doing everything you can, and stop calling you Shirley, which means that this is another 82 minutes of sports, right?
All sports on East to West with Nick and Rob. Give the people what they want.
That's not what they want, but we'll go with it.
What are we talking about today, Rob?
We're going to do a recast reboot of an old classic movie.
It's my favorite kind of recast reboot.
Going to show it on all of the drive-ins in Kansas City.
This is another one. We're starting to make this a trend that we are recasting, rebooting movies that probably shouldn't be touched. But this actually, I did a little research on this one and it was a lot of fun. So I'm kind of excited for it anyway.
Well, I have two picks for every pick in case any of yours overlaps any of mine. So I have a backup person.
Listen, no Anna Kendrick allowed. All right, just cross her right off.
She's not in this. I mean, how are we going to put Anna Kendrick and Ben-Hur? Oh, we're not doing Ben-Hur. We're doing Breakfast at Tiffany's.
All right, Nick and Rob, recast, reboot the movies.
Hit the music. East to West with Nick and Rob, recast, reboot the movies.
East to West with Nick and Rob, recast, reboot your favorites. I think The Godfather. Do The Godfather.
Take the cannoli.
Yeah, leave the gun though. Just leave the gun. Leave it behind. Grab the cannolis because they're good. They taste good. The gun's a murder weapon.
I gotta make you an offer you can't refuse.
Mo Xing Xia. Don't react so well. Double lunch.
Too many jokers.
All right, let's get right into this, Nick. I've got, six or seven people that I've cast in this movie.
I've got six parts, but it's negotiable. I have kind of a seventh. Really, four matter, and the rest I don't care so much about, but I have cool people for them anyway. Let's go director first, Rob, because I think we got to set the tone of this movie. Capote wrote, it's a little novella, basically a small novel, and it's pretty dark. It's one of these weird movies that I saw, and I love this movie, by the way. I love it. It's probably my top 100 of all time. When I saw it at 15, I thought one way about it. Then I saw it at, 20, and I was like, that's a little weird. And then I saw it at 35 and I'm like, this movie's effed up, man. It's like the more you understand about this movie, the weirder it is.
You mean the fact that no one knew that she was an escort?
Listen, now Truman Capote himself says she was not a prostitute. He calls her an American geisha, party girl, basically. But regardless, once you know that, it's hard to watch the movie. It's not really a romantic comedy traditionally. It's kind of like a dark dramedy, basically.
Well, I don't want to take it to those tones from then, because that was then and this is now.
So you're not going to harden it up? You're not going to have Mel Gibson direct this thing?
No, I went with a female director and I went with Tina Fey to actually direct this.
Wow, that's interesting. That kind of blows my mind. I'm not sure how I feel about that. Does it mean that you're going further and leaning toward comedy more so? Or are you still keeping sort of the more serious stuff in this film?
Well, I'm going with a Mean Girls approach in this. So that's kind of what I'm going for here. There was some hard moments in that and some funny moments.
It's actually a pretty underrated film on balance. That Mean Girls is a legit 6.57 on my Shawshank scale there.
Before we get started, though, I know that the original, the girl Holly, I swear she was speaking in five different languages during this movie. I mean, her voice kept changing.
She's a Renaissance woman. Absolutely. She's been all over the world, man. That's what American geishas do.
It's almost like she forgot where she was at some points in the movie. Because,
you know, few times in the history of cinema do you find an actress that no matter what the role is, no matter what part she's playing, no matter what she's saying, even if her character is sort of untoward, you just fall in love with her. You can't help yourself. In my eyes, it's Audrey Hepburn before, and then it's Julia Roberts probably now, and maybe there's somebody, you know, on the up and up coming up soon. And that's pretty much it. I remember when I saw Julia Roberts in My Best Friend's Wedding, and she's an awful, awful character in that movie. And I'm still in love with her. Can't help it.
She does a mean karaoke too. So
she breaks into the guy's email. I mean, this is a corporate building. She should go to jail for that.
You know, okay. She probably works for IT. Who knows?
And I'd bail her out and, you know, we'd go searching for the cat together.
She could be corporate security, you know?
Yeah. All right. I'm going to shock you a little bit with my director pick because, you know, when I think Breakfast at Tiffany's and I think think recast, reboot this movie, I definitely thought of Julia Roberts. But I think we're probably a little bit past the time where that's going to work out. And she's done enough romantic comedies. But what I did like was seeing Julia Roberts and Clive Owen in a movie a few years ago that everybody hated. And I, to be fair, I sort of hated it too. But it's grown on me as I rewatched it, made the rounds on HBO for a while. It's a Tony Gilroy movie called Duplicity. And it's a weird sort of corporate espionage movie that is kind of nonsensical and doesn't work. But Tony Gilroy kind of makes it charming and romantic in a weird way. Now, Tony Gilroy has done Michael Clayton, one of the best movies of the last 25 years. Years probably. George Clooney, classic, right? He also kind of workshops a lot of movies. He worked on Rogue One a little bit, did that Bourne Legacy movie with Jeremy Renner. He's a weird cat, but I think he's right for this reboot recast. I can't totally put my finger on it, but I don't want this Breakfast at Tiffany's to be super, super soft. I wouldn't go necessarily the direction you are with Tina Fey. I kind of want it to be a tiny bit more gritty and maybe a tiny bit more grounded, a little bit more Truman Capote. So I'm going Tony Gilroy for my director.
Okay, so you're casting Samuel L. Jackson in this movie that I know. Get these motherfucking diamonds out of my motherfucking Tiffany's.
All right, so let's get into the nitty gritty here. Do you want to go the big ones first and work our way down, or do you want to go opposite town?
Let's go opposite. Let's work our way up to those big parts.
Okay. So what's your lowest part on the totem pole there?
Okay. Very, very small part, but you need the weather every now and then. You need to know what the weather's going to be in certain areas.
I wrote it down just in case. I have it off to the side, but since I know you, I was like, all right, let me put somebody for Sally Tomato.
Sally Tomato. Okay. My guy for Sally Tomato is Steve Carell.
Oh, I don't hate that. I kind of like that. I mean, in a Tina Fey movie, it kind of works. He kind of got a bad rap on that Netflix show, Space Force. That was mixed bag of nonsense, but it had moments. And I think, you know, we haven't seen him in a role like a pseudo mob boss. That's fine. I'm okay with that. I went a little classic. I wanted to see Al Pacino take a flamethrower to Tiffany's. I thought like he would be perfect for this. Why not? Right age. He comes in with the sort of gravitas. Let's let Al Pacino have that part. Chew on it for a couple lines.
Oh, yeah, sure. Cast the Italian in the part of the mafia boss.
Listen, man, watch the original. Nothing could be worse.
All right. Who's your low guy next? Who's your next one?
So then I have the sales clerk or the salesperson, which it's a small part to be fair, but I sort of think it's crucial. And I wanted somebody that somebody would recognize and also somebody who would theoretically say yes to something like this to be part of the movie possibly. I picked Courtney Cox. I thought that she would sort of get a couple of lines in there and be the sort of recognizable face that could make that part work. So for a smaller role, I just wanted her to be in this movie. I thought it was a no-brainer, and I like her in that part.
I'm going to use my second pick that I was going to use for Sally Tomato to be my sales clerk. Now, the original sales clerk was a male, correct?
Yeah, we're gender swapping. There are no rules on East to West with Nick and Rob.
I'm going with Sam Rockwell in that part as a sales clerk.
Oh, he wouldn't say he's an Oscar winner now. He wouldn't say yes to that, but maybe he would. I don't know. If he said yes, I'm okay with that. How about they're both there? Let's just put Sam Rockwell and Courtney Cox in there. I love that duo.
I think it would work because he plays a real good jerk too. So,
he's a great asshole. But he has heart. You can tell. He always had some heart.
I can hear Al Pacino right now going, he's a great asshole. Great asshole.
She had a great ass.
Let's go with Doc.
This is an important part. I want you to go first on this because I really like my pick and I'm interested to see who you put here.
Well, I have two picks and depending on how this works out, the person's going to be a little bit older than my character, obviously, to be her ex husband.
I mean, again, there are no rules necessarily, and depending on who your leads are, the age difference could be all over the map. But theoretically, you'd want the character to be a little bit older.
Originally, Buddy Epson. Yeah, woo doggies. All right.
A familiar face, and you have sympathy for him. I think that because of who he is at that time, that part of what works about that part.
All right. So here's my pick, Colin Firth.
Oh, that's interesting. I do kind of puppy dog face. I kind of do like that, actually. You know what? I picked a British guy, too, and I went with Hugh Grant. Ooh, I just sort of, he's aged into this role to perfection, really. But either one of those guys, they're both in Bridget Jones' Diary. I mean, it's a win-win. I like either one of those guys. I lean a little bit more toward Hugh Grant. I think like he got to be just a little bit weird to be that character. He's confused. He's the estranged husband. The marriage was annulled. It's a little bit wishy-washy. And I think that I lean just a slight bit toward Hugh Grant there.
That's good because I really don't want to use my other guy that I had in this part. So
we'll just I thought about Michael Keaton. I'm not going to lie to you.
I had Edward Norton.
Oh, come on. No way. It doesn't work. I'd love to see it not work.
Okay. 2E.
This is an important character. Again, if you haven't seen the movie in a while, go back and watch it. I'm telling you, at this age, I'm almost afraid to watch it again because each time I watch it, it becomes like darker and darker and darker. And I feel like Truman Capote tricked us all this time. I think that this character is the one that I'll fight for. So I'll go first here. And it's a little bit of a reunion because I'm a big fan of Notting Hill, a beautiful movie, Richard Curtis directed with Julia Roberts and Hugh Grant. Right now, I've already cast Hugh Grant as Doc. I'm going to put Julia Roberts in this part. And I just think her persona, and she's aged into this role perfectly. I think this is a good move. I like Roberts in this part.
Okay. I put Renee Zellweger in this part.
Well, I don't hate that either. You know I'm in love with Renee Zellweger. Always have been. She killed the Judy Garland movie. Killed it. Wasn't that's a great movie. Based on. She killed it.
Yes. I based it mostly on.
Yeah, I can't argue. I like the Hugh Grant, Julia Roberts reunion, but I wouldn't go to the mattresses with it. Renee Zellweger is a great casting move right there, too. Either you can't go wrong either way.
Now, here's the part that had all the controversy.
It makes my stomach curl. Do we have to cover this? Do I have to edit this whole segment out?
Yuni Yoshi.
Let me put my teeth in. Hang on a second. Give me a second. All right, let's go.
If you see this movie, you'll understand why we need to cast this. Listen, and I actually...
Blake Edwards. Come on, man. Self-awareness. Raise your hand on the set and be like, Mickey Rooney, you're a legend. We're not going to do this to you.
Exactly. I mean, this was awful. Buck teeth, all funny glasses, squinty face.
It's unwatchable. It's unwatchable now. It really is.
This character is unwatchable in the movie. I want to make him watchable.
I do too.
Obviously, there's two choices for this role, but I went with the more unconventional one, and I'm going with Jimmy O. Yang.
I don't hate it. I went a different way, but I like that a lot. Again, I think we're making a little bit of two different movies here. I think the tone of mine, yours is going to make more money than mine. I'll put it that way. I picked Donnie Yen, who I just saw in Mulan. He's in Rogue One. You've seen him quite a bit. I just think I want my Yanoshi to be just a little bit darker and a little bit more stern and a little bit less tolerant of Holly-Golightly. So that's why I picked Donnie Yen. But really, both of those, I totally agree with.
So where I'm going Happy Madison, you're going Blumhouse on this.
I'm kind of going Blumhouse, yeah. I kind of want the darkness. And again, if you asked me 20 years ago to cast this movie, it's all bubblegum, man. But now, as an adult, and I just can't do it. I can't go back. I can't put the toothpaste back in the tube.
Here's the big ones.
This is huge. Again, I just want to preface this before we pick these two actors by saying this movie should not be touched. It really should not be. It's unnecessary. But if you're going to do it anyway, Jason Bateman, we're talking to you. Don't get any ideas. We're gonna help you out here.
Yeah, Jason. All right. Let's go with Paul.
Do I have to go first? I want you to go first.
You want me to go first? All right. Once again, I have two choices. Depending on how I went with my picks, and I'm picking a guy that is good looking, because back then George Papad was a beautiful looking man.
I love it when a pod comes together.
I love it when a pod comes together.
The handsome fella. Great haircut.
Blue eyes. I mean,
yeah. They sparkle. Okay?
So I went with the person that could probably be the George Papad of this era. All right?
Don't say Liam Neeson.
No. Don't laugh at me when I say that.
Okay. All right.
This was my first choice.
Right.
Zac Efron.
I have a hard time accepting this, Uncle Bookie. Listen, he is a handsome fellow. I know he was kicking the tires on possibly being Wolverine or Batman. His name comes up quite a bit. I don't think he could do it. I don't think he's likable enough. Papard is a complicated character in this movie and in the book, and I think that he's got to be likable. I think too many people already hate Zac Efron, probably because he's too handsome.
Do you want me to tell you who my other choice was?
Of course I do.
Okay. It was James Marsden.
I like that one. I like that one. Certainly better than Efron. Now, I like it, but it depends who your Holly-Golightly is, so I'm going to reserve judgment till we get there.
Okay.
I'm going to pick somebody, and you're probably going to roll your eyes. Now, I cast two people as Holly. Either one I'm totally fine with. It just depends how you feel about the age difference. But my George is my George, and I'm not backing down from it. I think in the original 62 Breakfast at Tiffany's, Papard was around 43, and Holly, Audrey Hepburn, was 32, 33, somewhere in there. So about 10, 11-year age difference. I tried to find somebody in my 40s, and I originally thought Bradley Cooper. He had already done A Star Is Born. I don't want him involved with directing and writing. I just didn't want that. So I went a different direction, a guy that could clearly do comedy, but also could be dark and can do the drama side. I know he's charming. I know he's charming because he's in La La Land and I love that movie. I went Ryan Gosling and it's not negotiable really. I just think he's a winner for this. He's likable and he can be complex.
Insert huge sigh right here.
Must say the mind reels.
I'm sorry, man. I couldn't help it. I'm sorry. I am who I am. It's just a handsome fella, too. Come on. He can wear a suit like nobody's business. I believe he's a writer. He could be a writer. But you know what's coming next.
I think he's a better driver than a writer, but we'll just leave.
Great driver. He's great when he doesn't say anything, right? Remember the Titans? He's so charming in Remember the Titans before we even knew him.
All right, let's go for it. Holly, go lightly.
You want me to go? I'll go first on this since I made you go first.
What was her name? Juju Beauregard or something?
It depends what you read and depends what you believe. Loosely based on Gloria Vanderbilt. Or an algorithm of many party girls that Truman Capote knew at the time. Based on what your life experience is sort of how you accept this character. As I get older, I look back and I see her as more of like a sympathetic character. When I was young, I'm just in love with her. It doesn't matter what she's saying, right? Even as an older person, I have sympathy, but I'm still in love with her, right? I want to rescue her now. It's a complex character to cast and a complex role to play. 10 years ago, it's Julia Roberts, probably. Maybe it's Julia Roberts now. I'm not so sure. But I went with my first instinct was Zendaya. Incredibly likable, absolutely stunning. We've seen Euphoria. She's so charming in the Spider-Man movies, probably the best thing in those movies. I just think she could pull this role off. Now, I think she's 23, 24 years old. So it's possible she's too young for this. So if you are going to not let me cast Zendaya, then I'm sorry, America. I'm going to choose Emma Stone. And I think she's the right age. And we already know her chemistry with Ryan Gosling. And it's hard not to like her. I have tried not to like her and failed many, many times. I don't always love her movies, but I think this could be, and again, if you're thinking about my darker sort of Tony Gilroy directed Breakfast at Tiffany's, I think this would be a great part for her. I really do.
That's nice.
It's your a movie, La La Land reunion on East to West with Nick and Rob.
Your movie has just become the Ishtar of 2021.
I did kick the tires on Rachel McAdams, but I just couldn't get there.
All right. Hands down, no ifs, ands, or buts. My Holly Golightly is. Get ready for it. Ariana Grande. Boom. Drop the mic.
Oh, come on. You're making like a straight to Netflix movie. I'm making a masterpiece that makes no money, loses $80 million for the studio, but it's nominated for 6 Academy Awards.
I'm making dollar bills, y'all.
This is East Coast versus West Coast, man. I mean, I kind of want to fight you on this.
She can
sing. I
don't
even like her music. She's a beautiful lady. She can sing great, but I don't think she's got the chops for this, man. I really don't.
She can act. She's got the right look to be Audrey Hepburn. She's got the look.
Ariana Grande and James Marsden. I have to believe that they're complicated.
You want to recast La La Land 2. That's what I'm seeing.
Because La La Land 1 was a big win, baby. That's why. And we're just going to roll it back.
Yeah. And you remember what happened to Gandhi 2?
He killed everybody.
I'll let you recast La La Land 2 when we finally get Spaceballs 2, The Quest for More Money.
Breakfast at Tiffany's, The Flamethrower. The kids are going to love it. Well, like I think this is probably the furthest apart we've been. And again, Zendaya, Gosling, I'm okay with. Maybe what it is that how much do you like the original, Rob? Are you like a huge fan? Have you seen it many, many times? I own this movie.
I've seen it a few times. I watched it again today just to refresh my memory. And I wouldn't touch it. I wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole.
Now, I want to ask you this question because I love a weird and controversial movie that Sidney Pollack directed around 1995. Maybe I'm 15, 16 years old. He made the Sabrina remake. Do you remember that with Greg Kinnear and Harrison Ford? It's actually a remake of a Billy Wilder film in 1954. And that one was somewhat controversial. They sort of tried to roll it back and played classic Hollywood with it. And it lost. They spent a ton of money on it. They lost a lot of money on it. Didn't do super well. But I really like that movie. I always, maybe like once every 5 to 10 years, need sort of a classic looking Hollywood movie to be made. For me, La La Land was that. And I think that Tony Gilroy could give us that in 2022, 2023, and I would love it. I think it's not for everybody, but we're not done yet because it's not just the movie itself. This movie has one of the greatest movie songs of all time, and you are a music guy. So you tell me, are we writing a new song for this Breakfast at Tiffany's, either version of the film, or are we just singing Henry Mancini, Johnny Mercer's Old Moon River? What are we doing there?
Moon River will be strewn throughout the movie as part of the background
track. As it was the first time around.
However, the new song that I want to go with in this, It's not really a new song, but it's written by a legend, John Legend, that is. And I would like to see a female singing All of Me in this song.
Are you talking about John Legend of La La Land? Is that the John Legend you speak of?
I'm talking about John Legend.
I don't know why I keep moving my body.
I'm talking about John Legend, the musician, not John Legend in La La Land.
Same person, man.
While your movie is selling out theaters like right now during the pandemic, a year from now,
my movie's been delayed like 5 times because
I'm gonna be
too much money on it. The rewrites. Tony Gilroy is a complicated director. I got all sorts of problems in my production.
I got downloads. I got dolls, swag on my movie.
My movie is going to end my career, okay? But here's the thing: I'm going to go out with a bang because I'm not even going to change the song. It's basically going to be the classic version of Henry Mancini and Johnny Mercer's Moon River, except it's going to be Lady Gaga and Tony Bennett. And if not Tony Bennett, I'll accept Bruce Springsteen, and they're going to do a recut of the song, very traditional, and it's going to be musically in the background. Emma Stone or Zendaya is going to sing it in my movie, and then they're going to close the movie with that movie. It's going to be incredible. That's all right. I'll wake you up when it's over. You'll wake up to Moon River.
My God, why don't you just have Post Malone do it? You know,
I don't hate it, man.
Lady Gaga, come on. Hey, you know what? Let's just take all the past Oscar winners and just jam them all into one movie and make a bomb.
Let's take an old John Legend song and cram it into my comedy with Tina Fey. Sure, let's do that. Remember when they made like the two Asteroid movies really close together? Clearly, Armageddon won the battle, but Deep Impact is the better movie. So maybe I'm Deep Impact and you're Armageddon. I could live with that. That's fine with me, man.
I'm all about the blockbuster, and you're all about the getting your block busted.
That's correct. Yeah, that is correct. I want the emotion, man. I want to be brokenhearted. I want complexity. I want my American geisha to be super complicated. I just want that.
Your budget's like $650 million, and mine's about $150 million.
My huckleberry friend.
How do I look?
All right, folks, let's take a little break and go to our sponsor.
Carol fucking Bastion.
Hey, guess what? We're back.
We're back, baby. What are we talking about next, Rob?
Well, first of all, if anybody wants to complain about us, please email us at easttowest@nickandrob.com.
easttowest@nickandrob.com.
Or if you want us to get it really quick, tweet us at Nick and Rob E2W. That's Nick and Rob E2W. I say it twice because Nick can't.
So what are we talking about next?
Well, speaking of complaints, let's do a little bit of bubble talk.
Oh, ginger ale, ginger pop, ginger beer, beer bubbles, bubble aid, bubble cola, double bubble burpa cola, and all the crazy carbonated stuff that tickles your nose.
All right, all right, all right. Bubble talk. Here we go. Sports, everybody's favorite segment on East to West with Nick and Rob. The NBA is starting to fizzle, right? The Clippers shockingly lose to the Nuggets. Were you surprised by that?
No.
I was surprised there was a Game 7, and then when it gets to Game 7, everybody knows anything can happen. But I really still even didn't expect the Clippers to lose. I kind of feel like they stunk up the joint. I mean, credit to the Nuggets, but Nuggets-Lakers, that's just a weird Western Conference Finals to me.
We'll see what happens. You know.
Yeah, I think the Lakers are going to steamroll the Nuggets, unfortunately, but I hope I'm wrong about that.
The big story is, do they fire Doc Rivers? And no. I say no.
Yeah, I say no. No, he's a class act. It's not his fault. They should fire Paul George.
What else you got?
And we'll keep it moving here. So the Celtics got a bad matchup with the Heat. The Heat, blatantly underrated all season long. I like them, but it did take me a while. They are probably going to lose. They are down 2-0 so far. Do you think we have any hope of evening up the series or getting back in this thing? Or what do you think about that? Two really close games if you want to hang your hat on something.
Well, it's the classic case of a better team taking on a hotter team.
Yeah, I think that's the right comp, actually. That's really smart because the Celtics are really good. We have some injuries, of course, but the Heat are just hot, man. They both kind of play the same way, which I like. It's kind of basketball I like, but the Heat are more healthy and, like you said, much hotter.
And that dude, Kelly...
Kelly Olynyk?
Yeah, he used to...
With the scrunchie in his hair?
Yeah, he used to be a Celt.
All right, so look, I mean, the only thing that could be worse than that, the sort of crappy NBA news that's going on in sports, is the atrocious hockey news. Now, it's bad enough the Bruins kind of got tanked out and they didn't do so well, but did anybody in America want a humid, hot Dallas Stars team against a humider, hotter, crappy Tampa Bay Lightning team? Dallas-Tampa is your Stanley Cup final. Is something just not right about that?
Let the ratings reach astronomical heights.
Four old white guys in Florida and three gun-toting Texans are going to be watching the Stanley Cup Finals. It's going to get slaughtered. By the way, all four sports are going at the same time, so they're all sort of divvying up the audience. Ain't nobody got time for Dallas-Tampa. I'm sorry, NHL. You should have fixed these games.
The hockey season right now is just so weird. They kind of,
it was okay. I was into it for a while, but man, I mean, I hate New York, and I desperately wanted the Islanders to come back in that series.
Dallas-Tampa.
Can we spend a moment on baseball, Rob? Just quickly.
Sure.
So at the beginning of East to West with Nick and Rob, I mentioned a few of my hot baseball picks, and one of them was the Cincinnati Reds. Now, the Cincinnati Reds have been on fire for a couple of weeks now and are inching their way into the playoffs. The White Sox clinch, Tampa Bay clinched, the Dodgers clinch. What are your prospects there? Do you think this is going to be a fun playoff run? I know you were texting me about the MLB announcing a bubble for the playoffs. Do you like that decision?
Yeah, I do like that decision. Let's play the bubble in the hot sports community right now of Texas.
Well, at least they got air conditioning.
Bubble's going to be in Arlington, Texas. I believe San Diego.
I think it's San Diego, which is a great spot. I'm totally okay with that. I wanted the NBA bubble to be in Vegas, which I thought would have been a great spot too.
That would have been probably better than Orlando. I mean,
Orlando just, yeah, it feels weird. I want to ask a couple of questions about what baseball does recently. You've seen it on SportsCenter a few times if you've been watching the highlights like I have. And I've seen it a couple times in a real game. This thing where the cardboard cutouts get hit by a home run, where the outfielder whips a pitch into the stands to hit a cardboard cutout. I love this. Are you afraid that when real fans come back, this is going to cause problems? Well, this is my favorite thing this year in baseball. I love it. Other than Mookie Betts, of course. Who's batting over 300, just for the record, folks.
Whatever.
Future Hall of Famer.
Yeah, okay.
Bet on Mookie like nobody downloads.
Yeah, no one likes that episode.
I like it. That's all that matters.
And I even was a nice guy and put out a burst.
I saw that.
You
put out a pity burst. I appreciate that audio burst. Shouts audio burst, by the way. Appreciate that.
Well,
I love this cardboard cutout thing. I mean, they pick some cardboard cutout, whether it's like a famous person or not. Or the other day, I think it was Adam Duvall hit a cardboard cutout of a dog up in the upper deck there. And I was like, oh my God, this is incredible. I'm going to miss the cardboard cutouts. I never would have thought that at the beginning of this thing.
Someone needs to tell him two words, Michael Vick. Well, anyway.
Yeah. Good call.
So Adam Duvall, I think it would have been better if Adam Duvall like turned around and whipped a pitch at Robert Duvall. I mean,
did you see the judge? Well, that's a rough performance. They're not all gems. And why is he not in Godfather 3? Can somebody just solve that mystery for me?
No, I don't know. I think he was busy making another movie.
All right. So let's just briefly go over what we saw in week one football. We had our picks. Of course, we have another segment to cover that. What are the standout performances for you in week one? Anything blow your mind? Were you impressed, or you want to talk some shit about Brady? What do you want to do here?
Well, I was about to say it sure as hell wasn't Tom Brady or Rob Gronkowski.
I laid it out there for you. I'll lob it in there. I'll throw a straight wiffle ball to you.
Funny thing is that Brady scores the first touchdown for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on a run.
43 years old, rushing touchdown.
Yeah, but like I said, he fell on the ground and happened to be near, you know, the goal line. All right.
He was fired up in that first quarter, by the way. He's yelling at folks. None of the receivers know the routes. Offensive line was all over the place. Give him a break here.
Okay. First of all, man, they did not look good.
They looked poorly coached.
Look good.
And I'm just going to say it right now. Bruce Arians, I'm not sure if he's a great coach or not. I like his offense, but maybe he doesn't run a great franchise. Special teams for Tampa Bay, atrocious. Atrocious in week one, but they're playing a good team also. So you got to factor that in.
Well, let's go with the coaching, the coach of the week. And this is my pick for the first coach to be fired this season. Gage. Bye. He's bye. Goodbye. Just go.
He's awful. He's awful. And I made a sounder just for this guy.
Because I knew we wasn't going to win a damn thing with the New York Jets.
They are so bad. holy shit, they're bad. I remember the first quarter of the Bears game. I'm thinking, this is the worst team in the NFL right now. This is, they're going to be worse than Miami. They're going to be worse than the Jets. Nope. The Jets, they come out of nowhere to be just fucking god awful. That was atrocious.
I have an idea. Let's take the New York Jets and trade them for any team in the CFL.
Let's get Shane Falco instead of Sam Darnold. How about that?
Oh my God. I think he's still seeing ghosts.
Now, let me, because we can't go too long in the NFL. We got picks. We got lock of the week. We got a lot of stuff going on. The Lions. Is this, what is Matt Patricia? I want to root for him. You know I love him. I loved him when he was with the Patriots. I don't understand why they are so weirdly game managed, especially as the game gets closer. It's like they give these things away.
Because he's a defense guy, and I don't think he knows how to run an offense.
Maybe so. Maybe you're right about that. Maybe he's like relying on Matt Stafford to control the offense, and he's not trustworthy either.
They all were under the tutelage of Obi-Wan Kenobi. Okay.
These are not the droids you're looking for.
And these are definitely not the coaches these teams are looking for.
Okay, can we talk just for a second about the surprise wins of the year? Because we both texted a little bit about it. The Washington football team, the fucking Washington football team, and the fucking Las Vegas Raiders. Both kind of sneaky, weird, come from behind victories. Surprised by either one of those?
No, I'm actually not. The Redskins would be a much better team if they were sold to somebody else.
I totally agree with that. I have nothing to, I have no response to that. It's absolutely, that's from your mouth to God's ears.
And I have the principal new owner for them.
Zendaya.
Sean P. Diddy Combs.
Oh, I don't hate it. Yeah.
The Washington Redskins.
He's got the capital. Yeah, let's make that happen today. Get better than A-Rod. I thought you were going to say A-Rod. And I was like, no, no chance.
No. A-Rod can be worse. Speak. So, and the Raiders, I mean, what a good game. That was a really good game.
So here's the thing. Carolina was one of the bets I lost in real life. They were one of my picks last week, if you recall. And I like the way Carolina played. Robbie Anderson, Teddy Bridgewater, there's a lot to like there. CMC took a little while to get going. The defense in Carolina is really, really bad. So I'm going to pump the brakes on the Raiders a little bit. Their defense was a little bit better, I think. And Josh Jacobs looked a little bit more seasoned at the running back position. But I'm not totally sure about that team yet. So for that one, I'm going to pump the brakes and say, give me a couple more weeks of watching them before I decide that John Gruden should keep his job for a couple more years.
Well, we'll see. I don't like John Gruden. I do like the players that are on that team.
I do like this Henry Ruggs guy. He's definitely fast. Now, can he figure out the route running and can Carr get the ball to him? I'm not so sure. Or Derek Carr.
Derek Carr is a great quarterback.
He's not bad. I definitely would say that. He's not Sam Darnold.
Let him play his game. Just let him play his game. They're not letting him play his game.
If you watched Hard Knocks, 2 years ago or 1 year ago, and you've listened to the interviews, I don't think Gruden likes him. Do you get that vibe?
I do get that vibe.
Weird, right?
Gruden didn't want him, but he stuck with him because nobody wanted to go to the damn Raiders under Gruden.
Let me ask you one more question because this is a hot name and I don't want to spend a ton of time talking about teams from Ohio. Baker Mayfield. I thought he was close to losing his job after week one. He plays on the Thursday night game, plays a little bit better. Odell Beckham Jr., rumored to be traded, had a nice game there. Do you think he saved his job for a few more weeks? Do you think they're counting on him in Cleveland? You know, Cam Newton was one of the names that they were kicking the tires on in Cleveland before he went to the Patriots.
Well, Baker Mayfield, another quarterback who I wish they would just let him play his game.
Makes a great commercial.
He's very, he's
charismatic, right?
Yeah, he also knows how to take care of this COVID by all the cleaning he does. So,
look, his book club, unbelievable.
But
I kind of like him. I sneaky root for him for some reason. I didn't like him in college at all, but I kind of root for him now that he's sort of been punished a little bit and has been relegated to the Cleveland Browns.
Right, Baker Mayfield needs to be let free to play his game. These coaches have to go with the quarterback strengths, and a lot of them don't. Coaches go with this game plan that they have in their head without actually ever thinking of the players that they have.
Now, this is one of these things where I'm going to hold you to it, okay? This is Uncle Bookie talking, and I know you, and I know you are a chicken before the egg guy. You're a Bill Belichick, not TB12 guy. You don't think the NFL is a coaches league? You think it's a players league? Because it kind of sounds like you're leaning toward the players here. You want to have a little more freedom.
I want the players to play to their potential. That's all. I want games that are going to keep my interest. I don't want to be like, oh, I'm done with this. Click.
Yeah. Yeah. There were some boring NFL games, to tell you the truth.
I mean, we're not watching the coach on the sideline, you know, on those cameras. We're watching the plays. So defense, offense, let them play the game.
And we're not watching NFL games, Tony Romo, to hear the excitement in your voice. Just FYI.
At this moment, I'm going to go on record and say, please, CBS, bring Phil Sims back to the games. And
I'll take money out of my own wallet for Phil Sims. I can't. Tony Romo makes me want to turn the volume down and put on East to West with Nick and Rob.
I thought you did that anyway.
I do. Every week. All right. Let's do our picks.
All right. It's time to place your bets. Hit the music.
And now, folks. It's time for Who Do You Trust? Hubba, hubba, hubba. Money, money, money. Who do you trust?
What's a casino? People gotta win sometimes.
Money, money, money.
You just cost me $6,000.
But nothing's predictable in this tough, harsh, highly competitive world where today's champion is tomorrow's crocodile shit.
All right, so there's quite a few legitimate games this week. Some interesting ones. All the lines, it feels like Vegas is kind of catching on. I'm going to give you three games, Rob, and we're just going to go over it a little bit, right? TB12. I didn't give it to you last week. I gave you the first week off. You've seen a little bit of what they do there with that Bruce Arians offense. Tampa gets a little respect here because obviously Carolina, with their first week loss, didn't look so great either. Tampa Bay -8.5 home to Carolina. The over-under is 48. Do you have any thoughts on that one?
I'm going to tell you what. It's going to be a bad week for Tom Brady again. Not only did he lose the first game of the season, but he's also going to lose the second game of the season to Cam Newton's old team.
Wow. So you're taking the points or you want to go money line and just make us a lot of money here?
Money line, baby.
Wow. Carolina money line. I like it. That's bold. I might put some money on that. I'm not actually going to pick the winner. I think you might be right. I think it's closer. I tend to think Tom pulls it off, but 8.5 seems pretty stiff based on what I saw in week one. So I'm going to take the over 48 points in that game and just kind of play it a little bit safe. If I can tease it 3 points to 45, I think that's a wiser investment also.
All right. I can go with that.
Let me give you another one here, Rob. This one I sort of like. Now, I'm not the biggest Deshaun Watson guy in the whole world, but I like him more than a lot of folks. His stock went way down after week one in the fantasy realm. People are like cutting this guy for, I don't know, Teddy Bridgewater and stuff. I think he's a little bit better than that, even though you know I hate Bill O'Brien. I think this game's kind of interesting to me. It's Baltimore at Houston. Baltimore -6. Over under here is shocking to me. I'm not sure what Vegas thinks. Maybe it's just a lot of respect to Baltimore. Over under 54.5. So Baltimore at Houston, over under 54.5, Baltimore -6. What do you think about that one?
On this one, I'm going to go with Baltimore, but I'm going to go 40 points.
Wow. See, I think it's under what they're saying it is, and I'll take Baltimore -6 on that one. So we're kind of on the same page there a little bit. People don't realize when you run the football a lot, the clock goes faster. I'm not sure what they're watching there.
And by the way, second coach to be fired this year will be Bill O'Brien.
He's on the list. He's definitely on the list. I kind of feel bad for him, actually. But, you know, all right, now let's do the big boy one, because I think this is important. And we talk about it. We're not going to pick the Patriots every single week, but this is a big game. So settle down, America. New England at Seattle. Okay, it's basically the game of the week. It's the night game. 44 is the over-under. I think Vegas is pretty close on that number, to be fair. Seattle -3.5. So not a ton of respect for Bill Belichick and Cam Newton's week one performance. What do you think about that game?
Well, the game is going to be played, I think, in San Diego. So that's
because of the air conditions, right?
Yes. So the cardboard cutouts are not going to be the Seattle fans that they were hoping to have.
Seattle, right? This is a huge loss for them. They had a nice win in week one, but this is a huge loss for them because their stadium play is a big factor in their games, their crowd noise.
So we're going to go with this, all right? We're going to pretend that the Patriots are playing the Chargers back in the old San Diego stadium there.
Not fair, man. Come on. The San Diego Super Chargers.
I'm going to go Patriots +6.
Pats +6. You're teasing this one. Okay. All right. So listen, I thought about this one quite a bit, and I think Vegas is pretty on the money here because Vegas gave Seattle that extra half point. Now, some places I've seen it 4, but the most common line there is 3.5. I'm going to take the Patriots +3.5 and just take that -110 number and not even mess with the over under. I could see this being like a 27-17 or a 21-24 Patriots loss or slight Patriots win. I actually think this is the first game where the Patriots and their weird kicker problems come back to haunt them. We didn't mention it in the bubble talk, but Steven Gostkowski, I think he missed four kicks before he makes that game winner. Did you have any nostalgia there when you saw some of that?
I'm thinking he's not ready to come back.
Yeah, I think you might be right about that.
I mean, man, rest up the leg or, you know what, retire.
He looked heartbroken. I mean, legitimately heartbroken. And Vrabel kept putting him out there in tough, you know, not the toughest field goal situations, but man, after the second one, I don't know. That was hard to watch.
I'm going to make a prediction that the Patriots are going to have Adam Vinatieri back kicking again by the fourth game.
Wow. I don't hate it. I don't really hate that. At least there's a stability there. And if you can get into the 40-yard line or 40-yard kick range, I'm totally fine with that move.
All right. Here's the big one. Here it is, Nikki the Greek. This is our challenge. Uncle Bookie versus Nikki the Greek with the Phantom on the side. Raiders, Saints game.
This one is tough, okay, because the numbers are, it reminds me of Vegas trying to trick me. Every time I see like a 4.5 line, I'm thinking like somebody paid a lot of money and I don't know what's going on here. There's something fishy in this game. The Saints, to be fair, you know, it depends how good you think Tampa Bay is, but the Saints look pretty good in week one. New Orleans -5 in Las Vegas with a 51 over under. This game scares the crap out of me. If you're forcing me to make a pick here, I'm going to take the under 51 and not touch the winner loser. I have a weird feeling that the Raiders can cover and or potentially win this game, believe it or not.
I'm going to go with New Orleans in this game over the Raiders with an over-under of exactly 36.
Wow. That's low. So what do you think is going to happen here? Just a ton of running and field goals?
I'm going to go with defense steps it up.
The Saints defense is definitely improved and the Raiders might be okay. Now, the Saints lost Michael Thomas. It looks like he's definitely not playing this game. So yeah, all right. I guess that makes some sense.
The Phantom, however, sees it differently. The Phantom's going with the Raiders with a straight up win over the Saints.
Really?
50 points.
The Phantom, to be fair, was 2-1 in week one. They went with the under in the Battle of Ohio game, and that went way over, although it was a weird game to watch. And then they nailed it with the first two picks. They had the Steelers as an outright win and the Titans win. So they got those right. Mm-hmm. So we, on our lock of the weeks, went 0-2. So we're stocked down, buddy.
Yeah.
You just barely missed it with the Titans. And I had a tough lock. I actually think that Giants game went exactly the way I thought it would, except that when they got in the red zone, they couldn't convert.
People, if you have Nick and Rob's rookie cards, throw them in the fireplace.
Fireplace, into the fireplace. All right. So what are our locks of the week, Rob? Because this is what America wants to hear. We want to make them some money.
First prize is a Cadillac Eldorado. Second prize is a set of steak knives. Third prize is you're fired.
So are you going to go with lock of the week for the Saints-Vegas game, or are you going to bleed into the Thursday game, which is the astounding, captivating Miami at Jacksonville game?
I'm going to stay away from Florida, and I'm going to go with the Sunday night game of the week. That's my lock.
And you're taking the Patriots plus the 3.5? Or you're taking the Patriots to win outright?
Patriots to win outright.
Wow. All right. For me, listen, I think that, again, that Saints Raiders game is really, really frightening to me. And I'd be nervous to even lock up the under 51. What I'll do is I'll sort of hedge a little bit here and I'll take the middle of the road line there. The over under is 40, 44, 44 and a half, 45 in that Patriots Seattle game. I'm going to go ahead and take the over 44 and a half. I'm going to give them the hook there and lock that up as my lock of the week. So Pats, Seahawks, I'm not sure who's going to win that game, but it's just barely going to twinge over that 44 and a half.
I like it. I like it. I like it a lot. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Place Your Bets.
Lock of the week.
Fuck you. That's my name.
Nick, this is a late night game this week. Well, for me it is. I mean, for you it's not. For you it's like, what, at 10 in the morning, the Pats game?
Yeah, absolutely. It's West Coast. East Coast sports fan living on the West Coast. Living the dream, baby.
Living the dream. All right.
I've already been to Tiffany's, had my breakfast, and now I'm ready for football.
And you ready for some food, too, for this game, right?
Let's do it. What do we got for the food segment this week, Rob?
Okay, because this is a late night game, let's talk about America's favorite takeout, Chinese food.
Americanized Chinese food. I like all the bad stuff. I mean, you know, you're going to force me to pick some like pretentious stuff here.
I know you're going to go with like the boneless ribs and the chicken fingers. Chickens don't have fingers, but, you know, well, let's leave it at that. And what else are you going to go with?
So, okay. So I'll start with something less traditional. You know, I like that poo-poo platter on the East Coast, but I'm not going to insult your intelligence there. For me, I'm going to go with the Kung Pao chicken because the Saskatchewan sauce, the chilies, the peanut stuff. It's a weird mix that I don't think I liked when I was younger, but I've grown to really like it now. So if done well, like the P.F. Chang style, I'm okay with Kung Pao chicken.
P.F. Chang's, my God.
I really like that one. I like that one. I can't lie to you, man. It's big on the West Coast.
All right. I'll give it to you. The West Coast Chinese food. Okay. You're going to find like a good place. You know, you're going to find yourself the greasy spoon style Chinese place. The place that you walk in and there's maybe four seats available in here. All right. And it's a counter, and the people are behind the counter busily making your Chinese food. And you know what? Kung Pao is one of my favorites, but I like Kung Pao pork, and I like it extra hot. I know you don't, but I like it extra hot. I like to get those little peppers in there. You know why? Because it's going to keep me awake for the game.
I agree, and I don't totally hate that. Like, you got to serve it to me over rice because I'm getting old and my acid reflux now, but I'll accept that. If you're going to go pork with me, I'm a sweet and sour pork kind of guy. And again, I want it served over rice. I just really like it with extra sauce on top.
And folks, General Gao is not a real general, okay?
He's not? He's not in Mulan?
So if you look at the menus, you see a General Gao, a General Tsao, a General Mao.
It's a great documentary on Netflix years ago about that. Did you ever watch that? Unbelievable stuff.
About the generals?
Yeah, it goes the history of that particular dish. Unbelievable stuff.
That's amazing. But I'm going to tell you something else that I like to have. Chinese breakfast. Egg foo young. With the gravy.
Listening. I like
and
it.
And you get a nice vegetable egg foo young. It's like a Chinese omelet, folks. It's the best of both worlds. You're watching that late night game, and you're probably going to be up until, on the East Coast, I'm sorry, you're probably going to be up until about midnight, maybe 1 o'clock, watching this game.
I feel so bad for East Coast fans. I still go out to dinner after all the football's over.
Where you're in the sports betting mecca, we're actually in the sports playing mecca.
I can't wait till the snow falls, it's cold, it's late, and you fall asleep in the fourth quarter when I'm trying to text you about the late night Patriot game.
It doesn't work. That would never work because that'd be up.
What about lo mein, Rob? Do you like any particular lo mein? Because I like beef lo mein. I don't really like vegetable or chicken, but if you got the beef chunks in there, I'm down.
I like shrimp lo mein. I like the house lo mein, actually. The house lo mein is, if you go to any Chinese restaurant, always look for these house specials, the house lo mein or anything like that, because what you're going to get when you order these is you're going to get the pork, the ham, the chicken, the shrimp, all in this dish mixed through, and it's worth it, worth every penny. So if you can't decide if you want chicken or pork or shrimp or whatever, go with the house special.
I agree. You got to judge it by what their house dishes are. Now, for me on the West Coast, when it's starting to cool down here in the fall, the weather turns here on a dime. I like a nice wonton soup. Occasionally, I'll get the egg drop soup, but it's a little more oily than I like. So anytime I'm feeling sick, I always order wonton soup. It's like a comfort food for me.
I don't go with many of the soups in any of the
a lot of sodium, unfortunately, but I still like it, especially when it's piping hot.
And you probably have your soup and you have it with a side of pickles and olives too, so you get the extra sodium.
I have every dish in my life with a side of olives, Rob. You know that. Nick's, can we talk a little bit about appetizers? Is it okay to bring up teriyaki beef sticks, or am I going to get thrown off the pod for that? I don't want to offend the chef over here.
First of all, I know that you're going to be getting crab rangoons, but those crab rangoons are also going to have probably olives in them too, right? Right?
We're going to stick an olive inside the cream cheese. Cream cheese in the olive in the little dumpling there.
So we're going to call them Mediterranean Chinese rangoons for you.
Side of hummus. Absolutely. This is a win, man.
This is almost like stoner food now.
Do you do any of these things? Do you do the ribs? Do you do the chicken sticks? What do you do on the, give me some of the guilty pleasure stuff you eat.
Okay. The chicken wings from a Chinese restaurant. Okay.
They're good.
Simplest made. Okay. They're marinated in ginger and soy sauce, and they're just dropped in the deep fryer. There's no coating on these. And it's you get that when they're piping hot, that skin is just so crisp.
Don't overcomplicate it. It's a win.
I mean, salt and pepper wings also. If you ever had a salt and pepper wing, basically just think about it. It's salt and actual green peppers, like a hot chili with them in the wings. So it's almost like getting a fancy wing at a Chinese restaurant. something you'd pay big money for anywhere else.
I like a nice steamed dumpling here and there. And of course, if you put 25 crab rangoons in front of me, especially while football's on TV, I will eat 25 crab rangoons.
That's good. And the other thing, the other elephant in the room, okay? The spare ribs. Don't get the Chinese spare ribs on the bone.
Come on, okay? On the bone. You got to get on the bone.
No.
You got to get your fingers. You got to get that ah so sauce all over the fingers. Come on, man.
Ah so sauce. What is the one thing you have to have, Nick? That one thing, that one Chinese thing that you must go to?
Okay. Now, it's not my favorite thing, right? But I'm, of course, going to order it and get it. I'm going to get an egg roll. I can't just go to a Chinese restaurant of any sort, of any quality, and not have egg rolls. I can't. It feels like sacrilege. I can't do it. And typically, I'll get two. I may not eat both of them, but I'm going to order two. For some reason, serving me one egg roll just feels weird. So I always want to pair it up. I don't want it to be lonely. But I can't do it. Wonton soup is a close second. And, you know, I like those beef teriyaki sticks. As I've gotten older, I've kind of got off of that. I can't go there without the egg roll. I got to get the egg roll. It's a must. I'm sorry.
I'm going to go with you right there. You have to have the egg roll.
It's weird, right? It's like you're missing something if you don't get it.
Right. The good thing about the egg roll is if you buy two, you have one for dinner, and then you take the next one to work with you the next day, and you have it for breakfast.
Yeah, it's an egg roll, right? And by the way, kind of like pizza, I'll eat my egg roll cold and in the morning. Doesn't bother me one bit.
Not one bit. And speaking of Chinese food, did you watch Dancing with the Stars this week?
Listen, you sent me messages on this, and, you know, it made me think maybe this is the end of days. Maybe the end of the world is coming. First of all, why would Dancing with the Stars let this lady, Carol Baskins, on this show to begin with? That is just, who runs that thing? I can't believe this is real. I can't believe we're living in real times right now.
Well, all you cool cats and kittens, let me tell you what happened on Dancing with the Stars this week.
She danced her way right into a jail cell.
They gave Carol Baskins the marquee dance, which is the last dance of the night. And she came out with her stupid headband on, dancing to, well, I won't even say it was dancing. She was kind of like flopping around the dance floor to Eye of the Tiger.
Oh my God. Okay. I can't even. You've sucked all the sodium out of my beef teriyaki stick.
Just grab an olive, because here's the kicker. In Florida, during Carol Baskin's dance, Don Lewis, her husband, his family, put an ad out. And this is amazing. They basically, during her dance, had this ad out accusing her of murder. And they want to know where their father is. And
do you know why they're accusing her of murder, Rob? Because she murdered him.
Exactly.
I don't need a two-hour ID special. Okay, I'm good. I'm pretty sure she murdered that guy.
We've got the fucking Raiders. We've got the fucking football team in Washington. And now we have Carol fucking Baskins.
Can we get Dan Snyder married to Carol Baskins? Can we get that? Can we make that happen?
Let's hope so.
What else you got for recommendations?
Okay. That was it. I just wanted people to know about that in case, you know, the Tiger King comes up. But
it's a rough week. Before we get into it, I know what you're going to bring up. Let me just quickly say it one more time. I've said it a couple times now. It might be my favorite show right now on TV, not the one we're about to talk about. Ted Lasso on Apple TV. This is really good. 22 to 25 minute episodes of television made by Bill Lawrence, the guy who did Scrubs. These are emotional. They are funny. They are entertaining. And this is the best stuff Jason Sudeikis has ever done, to include his Saturday Night Live years. I love this show. I'm shocked I do. It shouldn't work, but it does. Ted Lasso, Apple TV. All right, let's talk about the boys.
Oh, you know what? I'm not going to put Jason Sudeikis in my damn Breakfast at Tiffany's now. He's going to play Paul. All right, screw you.
Come on. No, it's too late. You're locked into James Marsden. That's on you, man.
All right, let's talk about it. The Boys.
So here's the thing, Rob. Didn't I recommend this show to you? I feel like I did.
You did.
This is the problem with The Boys. Now, I like it. It's smart. It's subversive. We've talked about that before. It doesn't leave you feeling good. That's the fatal flaw here. So I like to watch my favorite shows typically Sunday night, Monday night, when the sun goes down, it's a little bit dark, I'm chilling, maybe I've had a cocktail or two. but I want to feel like at least inspired or good or moved. And The Boys just kind of leaves me feeling a little bit uneasy.
It is that type of show. I mean, it will flip your stomach 6 ways to Sunday. I tell you that much.
Homelander is such a dick. But can I ask the question that everybody wants to know? How did you feel about Homelander blows Homelander?
I had to hold that in from telling you what happened. I was like, you have to watch this episode. It's disturbing.
One of the most uncomfortable 25 to 30 seconds I have ever, I'm trying to just relax and The Boys won't let me. What? I was glad he killed Doppelganger because I'm sick of that. I'm sick of that twist. I'm done with Doppelganger.
It's not even a good doppelganger. I mean, at least in the X-Men, the doppelgangers, they have a hot. I mean, that was a big, fat slob.
Can I ask you the question? Did you think Madeline was still alive for a moment there, or did you know the whole time?
I thought he was dreaming. I honestly did.
Yeah. I did think maybe dream sequence also, because I had a hard time believing. By the way, it undercuts it if she's alive, so I was hoping she wasn't. And so that was kind of a nice turn. And then Homelander blows Homelander kind of ruined my, you know, like, oh, smart writing.
Most disturbing episode of any television show ever in the history of television.
Is Homelander going to kill one of the original seven there? Is he going to kill somebody?
Oof.
You think he was going to kill Starlight? Because I thought like that would have been crazy if that happened. But basically, you got to fear for everybody's life.
We're going to have to see what happens, man. I mean, it's just crazy. It's just craziness.
We did learn more about Billy Butcher and his wife. Were you satisfied with the more information that we got there without spoiling too much?
I was. We're just going to leave it at that. I was satisfied with it.
It's good enough.
The story can carry on now.
All right. It's good enough. All right. We'll keep recommendations tight this week. Keep watching The Boys. I'll keep watching it, but I may switch my schedule around and close with Ted Lasso instead of closing with The Boys.
Any shout outs you want to give?
Quick shout out again to Dragon Questicles and producer Ryan. Get well soon, buddy. Great artwork there, and he's working on something new for us, so we can't wait to debut that.
Ooh, I hope it's in 3D and moves around the screen.
Talking Flick, talkingflick.com. Of course, we're going to cover The Boys this week, and then we covered Mulan last week, and realwatchability.com, my blog, as always. You can hit me up at Twitter at RealWatch.
Well, folks, it's been great. It's been fun, but it's time for us to say adieu. So everybody, have a great night, great week, great day. Peace.
Reacting in anger or annoyance will not advance one's ability to persuade. RBG, we're going to miss you.
You can't close shit. You are shit.